Hello, welcome to the Tuesday, February 24th, 2015 edition of the Sands and the Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and today I'm recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Let's start today with a privacy spin. First of all, tracking mobile devices. Of course, most mobile devices have GPSs built in and other ways to locate the device, but the user typically can restrict access to GPS. Now, another way to track the mobile device is by looking at its power usage. Android, for example, allows application to detect aggregate power usage. So the application knows how much power is used by the phone overall. A phone that moves typically jumps from different cell phone towers, which takes additional power versus a phone that's at rest. By looking at these changes in power usage, an application could potentially be able to detect where the user is moving. Now, in the experiments they were running, it worked quite well to identify the track a particular phone took. Not sure how well this will work across different phone models and such. They only tried a couple of different phones, and of course, it will also depend on what the user is doing with the phone while the phone is moving. There was actually a similar project at Virginia Tech a few years back where they were looking at detecting malicious network traffic by investigating power usage of mobile devices, because malicious traffic, in particular at higher rates, of course, tends to use more power than normal traffic. And our second privacy story is related to Google and Google's use of fonts. This is, again, a little bit an older idea. I think in 2013, I've seen it the first time, and I'll try to dig up the original paper, but apparently Google is now applying it on a larger scale. A web application has the option to offer fonts for download for a browser. Now, these fonts are being cached by the browser. So what Google apparently is doing, that they are offering you custom named fonts. So each user gets a different style sheet with a different font. And as a result, Google then can detect whether or not you already have this font cached or not. If you do have the font cached, then they know you're the same user that they tagged with this particular font earlier. Really hard these days to sort of avoid fingerprinting off browsers. Here, the font is really used as a cookie, for a lack of a better name for it. Now, you can delete these cached fonts, and that's probably the best thing you can do in order to prevent this kind of fingerprinting and tracking, at least over a long time frame. And one of the advantages that's often cited for open source security is the ability to actually inspect the source code. Now, the problem, however, is that hardly anybody using open source software actually uses source code. You download binaries instead and trust someone else to compile them for you. Unless you're one of the few leftover hardcore Gentoo users, most Linux distributions, for example, whether it's Debian, Red Hat, or whatever, offer binary packages that you download, and the challenge is to prove whether or not these binaries were actually compiled from the source that was supposedly behind those binaries. Well, Debian now made a big step forward trying to prove just that, and it's not as easy as you would think. How a particular piece of code is compiled depends a lot on compiler versions, configurations, even system configurations and the like. So it can happen that two people compiling the same source code on very close to each other's systems will end up with marginally different binaries. This project is using two different systems to do just that, calculating hashes, calculating them, and then comparing them to the actual distributed binaries. Looks like Debian so far is about 80%+ towards being able to prove that all of the binaries that are being distributed with Debian are actually derived from what's considered the Debian source code. And Cisco released an advisory last Friday for its iOS XR software and a number of other systems that suffer from an IPv6 denial of service vulnerability. The vulnerability is, well, imagine that, related to extension headers. If you ever looked at IPv6, extension headers can get rather complex, so they are a rich source for problems with implementations, and this is just another one. Now, there is no working exploit out there as far as I know, but still, you probably should patch this if you're using IPv6, because it could be used to shut down your network. And if you're using Palo Alto for your firewall, Richard just posted a nice and very detailed diary in how you can use the DShield block list to actually block connections on your Palo Alto firewall and then automatically update them. If you're interested in that, take a look and see if it works for you. Any feedback is always welcome on that. Also, whether or not this block list is helpful, it's just the top 20 networks that we see sort of sending attacks or sending packets to our DShield sensors each day. Well, and that's it for today. Thanks for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.